That didn't sound too, I'll get right on that. But maybe it just seems that way because, you know, we're online and...
Yeah, I don't know. didn't we get a password for something else?
I don't know how to do anything. You guys know that. I'm pretty bad with technological stuff.
Can't we just order passwords on Amazon? I don't know how it works.
Ooh, I ordered an old comic book on Amazon. It hasn't shown up yet. I'm curious if it's going to be a total fake or whatever. I don't know.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, listeners, to Indie Comic Book Noise. Here we are, hoping and praying that the technological forces, the AI chatbots, haven't taken us down. And by we, I mean you listeners are in for an extra special treat, because we have all four regular hosts of the show here today for you and your listening pleasure. Or in the evening, I guess, you know. You can listen to podcasts whenever you want. Who are the four? The Fantastic Four? Well, it's me, Andrew the Alley Rabbit, from sunny Los Angeles. And joining me, my fellow countrymen, from the bunker, Super Steve. Say hi, Super Steve.
Hi, Super Steve.
Finally, we have an even number with our Canadian compatriots? No, counterparts. That's what we're going to go with. From the nation's capital, the fully fortified Otter's Den. It's Phil the Otterwater. Say hi, Phil.
Hi, Super Steve.
And from... north of the Arctic Circle, Santa Claus's domain, the ice box with as many X's as you can spare. It's Whirlwind X Kevin. Say hi, Kevin.
It was an inside job. I'm on to you, Andrew.
Indie Comic Noise, part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Yes, you know the Deliberate Noise Network. It has all your favorite podcasts. And if you don't know it, you should definitely go check it out. You can hear one great podcast called Marvel Noise, which Steve knows something about, talking about all the great products you get from the House of Ideas.
That's what we do. We move product
and on the Marvel Noise.
And all the wonderful shows. But unlike Marvel Noise, as you heard from the intro at the beginning, this show does have some salty language and complicated, confusing ideas.
It's so, not going to be able to be helped tonight, I promise.
So I always say that we never really say anything controversial. We just have that so that people don't complain. And then Kevin sometimes puts up a controversial thing to say. Kevin?
Yeah, the website is down, so apparently we're very controversial.
You can hopefully find old episodes at our website when it's running. IndieComicBookNoise.com. Show notes, links, lots of fun things. I try and... direct us. I know sometimes we talk about some pretty obscure books, so I do what I can, people. Sometimes even I can't find internet proof of some of these things, so you'll have to take our word for it in those instances. You can find the show on social media, Facebook and Twitter, and some of the hosts are on social media as well. Find me on Mastodon. Holding
you
the
line. You haven't moved over to the Blue Sky yet?
I don't have an invite. Indie Comic Book Noise is just a free-flowing discussion where we talk about anything that we deem to be related to independent comics, including media tie-ins, merchandise, news of the world. But with Super Steve here, we don't faff about like we normally do. So we're going
to
get right
ready to talk about City Boy, The Vigil, and Spirit World.
You can save that for some aimless podcast with just the three of us. We have a celebrity in the house, Kevin. All right,
really?
Super Steve.
It's the stuff we can't talk about on Marvel Noise.
Well,
this is.
Well, we talk about some Marvel.
Let's just get filthy right away. I'll just get it right out of the gate here.
There's been three issues out. The third issue came out actually today at the time of this recording, but I haven't read it yet. So I've read the first two. It's an Image comic by writer Jerry Dugan and artist Scott Koblish, the team that brought you all of those Scott McTiernan versus various holidays and weed and everything else. Comics in the last year that I really enjoyed that have been collected in a trade paperback that was solicited last month, I think. And this new series is The Giant Cockchew. And it is the story of a kaiju invading a city, but it's got all the standard, cliches. It's a response, it's nature's response to us polluting the waters and nature fighting back. There's the military, there's the scientist who wasn't believed, and a military guy has to realize he was right and go call him and find him, and he's retired and he has to be convinced to come back and help because everything he said is actually coming true. But what is happening is the invasion of this giant kaiju, the cockchew. He uses his spiked, spindled, speared penis and is literally humping building after building, holding buildings by both sides and just like going at it. And the scenes, I mean, Koblish is a master at being able to draw movement and force in that Kirby, Eric Larson kind of a way where it's just powerful. But to see the power being shown as the hands gripping on this building while he's going to town on it, and the spiked penis is like ripping through offices and meeting rooms and pulling out people on its spiky spindles and everything. And it's, oh, someone comments on the street, those poor people were just trying to have a meeting. And he also craps all over the middle of like Main Street. And he does a whole butt wipe where he like slides his butt and really like, and the scientists, and maybe it is, I'm not actually sure who it is, but the narrator who's in the caption boxes calls out the cockchew as kind of a real dick because he could have just let one fly in the ocean, but no, he had to like, do it all over the city. And in his feces are all these primitive dinosaur demon-like creatures that just are running amok like raptors and killing all people, and it's just disgusting. He's a horrific blight on the city. And the scientist who has been brought back into the fold, the project that he had been working on that is revived, is him getting into like a giant mech, to face off against the giant cockchew, who on the last page that I saw had ripped apart a subway and was using a subway car like one of those like penis fleshlight things or something. He's going to town with his subway and all the car and all these people are flying out of it, and it's pretty damn funny. And I'll leave you with one last bit to give you the idea of the tone of the book. The headquarters that they have, like the SHIELD headquarters, it's spelt as an acronym, but the H in headquarters is the word headquarters. So like it could have just stopped there, but no, it's the headquarters, extreme advanced defense, quartermasters, ultimate armory, rugged terrain, environmental response squadron. It's just one silly thing after another, and the art's fantastic, and the, who doesn't like kaiju and giant mech?
Hey, that's why Bob Barker always said, have your kaiju spay or neutered, folks. You gotta get them before they mature.
If you can't get the first few issues of this book, get it when the trade comes out. It'll be worth it.
Who's it printed by?
It's Image.
Oh, Image, okay.
Yeah.
Nice, I approve. Well, I'm going to slide in a quick one, folks.
Hey!
As threatened, Andy's been buying dumb comics on eBay, and, you know, when the sellers combine shipping, although I haven't done it the last two times, I got to stop where I just throw in extra comics, because I'm like, well, I'm already paying for shipping. Mm-hmm. I'm saving money, which clearly isn't, but I got myself a sealed, thought I'd do a comic book unwrapping, bagged comic book, gentlemen. I thought I'd open it on air, and it's a Malibu comic.
Oh.
So this is rare. There's probably only millions of these sitting around, and it is a Sergio and Mark production, The Mighty Magnor.
Now, oh, nice.
This has a gimmick cover, so here I am. If you can hear the sound of
scissors. Oh, you got the cover.
That's scissors, folks, ruining a sealed, now never-to-be-sealed-again comic. Look at that, folks. For your listening pleasure, I have cost myself literally dimes worth of money or whatever the difference is. I think this was like a dollar book or whatever. Yeah, so basically...
Well, explained why it's sealed, but what would have been wrecked on that front cover if it wasn't.
Yeah, what happens is, as I'm opening it now, the cover folds out, but I want to do it so I don't destroy the cover. Because it's been sitting in the back, so it's a little stuck together. But let's open this up. I mean, this is, I'm sure, riveting radio, you know, with no visuals to go with it, but... Yeah.
That's why I said describe it. Yeah.
So basically, it's a pop-out cover, and it's... I feel like I'm such an idiot.
So, you know, putting it in, like, stacks and people putting it on the stands and moving it from boxes and shipping it and all that, they had it bagged so that it held it down, right? So it sort of held it flat, so nothing was going to catch on that and rip the fold-out piece off the cover.
Yeah. So, and it folds out into a pretty...
It's kind of like a Chinese food container, the way it opens up like a big blossom, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so I did it. You have to... There's a perforated edge that you need to tear along, and that's the part that was making me super nervous. But once you open it, so it's sealed at the top. So you basically... It's the picture of Sergio on the cover... with a little girl opening it and her brother fainting because ruined the comic like I just did. So once you pull it, that drops down. So then when you drop it down, it's a Sergio and Mark presentation from Malibu on the bottom. And then the rest of the comic forms the stand-up part. And there's three levels to it. The level of the damage, the Malibu Comics van getting destroyed, and then Magnor fighting a robot, and then a robot overlord behind him. Pretty cool. Like, I wonder how much this was a $3.95 comic. And that could not have been cheap for them to do this in 93, but hey, still 93. Times are great, right, boys? Comics are never gonna go down.
And this is the peak, 93.
This is Tom Lute and Stan Sakai, sort of the usual GRU crew, except this time, Magnor. And it's, I assume from flipping through, it's the usual one where Sergio falls asleep at some the setup, and then he daydreams all the crazy business that goes on, and that's how we're going to get Magnor. But it's pretty cool to see Sergio drawing himself and Mark so young.
Yeah.
Because this is 93, so it's, right, you know, 30 years ago or whatever. But
I didn't know about this book until just like last year when I ordered all six issues. That and a Dark Horse one from... several years later, maybe even into the early 2000s, that was like Space Circus or something like that. I ordered both of those six-issue series, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I am gonna run down the rest of this. I was just like, I had to get the crazy fold-out cut, and like I said, it was some, you know, a dollar or whatever added to whatever dumb comic I was buying already, or $2. But the inside back cover features an ad for Demon's Tales, created by Roland Mann, illustrated by Paul Pelletier and Tom Romano.
Wow.
A comic I'm not familiar with. But yeah, I always love, I have never been unhappy with a Sergio and Mark comic. They're pretty silly. I feel like if you read one and you like it, you'll probably enjoy all of them. And if you don't like it, you're probably not going to enjoy them. So that they carry a sensibility that informs their genre treatment, whether it's Tarzan or Gru or space or whatever it is, their treatment of it sort of overrides the more traditional genre elements, and they bend those elements to their style. Besides, now I'm increasing my Malibu comics portfolio, which you gentlemen know I don't really own a lot of Malibu, being sort of out of comics when they were having their heyday.
I love Malibu myself.
I like the Next Generation Dreadstar book that Starlin did with Ernie Colon.
Yeah, I can't believe it took me a while to figure out how to open something. I thought it would just pop. I didn't realize you had to tear it. Now I know why the brother was so upset.
They were serious about holding that cover down. Yeah,
they were. All right, that was just my quickie. Let me turn it over. Who wants to go? Phil, do you have anything you want to do?
Well, I read about 47 indie comic books.
We're not going to do that.
But that's okay, because it's stuff I covered on the show before, because I didn't think we were going to podcast so soon, but it was just The Girls by Luna Brothers.
And, oh, that's good. That's so good.
I love that one. This is the third time I'm reading it. And then 28 Days Later by Boom, because I rebought the omnibuses. Like, I have the issues, but I bought the omnibuses. And Boom, their books always fall apart on me. Like, one read, and they're... spines just like come unglued and pages start falling out every book I get from them that's big like that. So I'm gonna give my time to Steve, because I know he has a lot of books.
I
feel like they're not around.
I haven't seen them in forever.
One of them is around and producing stuff.
Like, they were doing their own thing for a while. But they're after brothers. The girls...
How can they do that? Or are they really brothers? Or is this one of those ones where they're not really brothers?
No, I think they're brothers.
Like, a bit.
It seemed like they had a falling out or something, because I still one of them, but they're working with someone else.
Oh, that's sad.
Because after The Sword, which was awesome, too.
Yeah, The Sword was great. I give that one
They
out.
Started doing their own thing after that.
The Sword I give to people that aren't big comic book people.
Yeah, me too.
Like, it's a good... Like, you don't have to be, it reads really easy, and you don't have to be a comic book person.
Every issue ends on, like, an exciting, crazy thing where you're like, oh, shit, I can't wait to read the next issue, too.
Yeah, so it's like an Abnett Lanning thing, we think, where they're just gone.
I've never read any of their books other than just a little thing here or there when they did things for Marvel and that.
You gotta try The Girls and The Sword. The rest
What about the Alex and Ada one?
That was just one of them, I thought. Was that both of them?
Yeah, that was just one of them. Yeah. No, that was one of them.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And it wasn't the same when they're apart, you know? Like.
Yeah, I mean, I read the Alex and A. I thought it was okay, but it didn't... Like, for me, The Sword was probably... Like I said, I can give that to non-comic book people. I think I gave it to my sister and other people. And give me, comic books aren't just stupid, dumb things.
And didn't they, one of them draw the Spider-Woman miniseries by Bendis? That was really good.
Yeah.
That's always sad when, they got to go find their own. Maybe they found, but it's just a little sad. Kind of like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle guys, too, when they split up and everything.
Yeah. I find when the team works really well together, once they split up, it's just, I don't know. They lose that magic, I think.
I don't know. Maybe sometimes one of them is like, hey, I'm not much into the drawing or whatever, and they go off and do whatever they do.
Like Eric Larson, because I feel like I haven't seen Savage Dragon in forever.
I feel like one came out recently.
Oh, I must have missed it. That sucks. Because I don't think I've read it for quite a while. The last thing I remember was that Canadian team.
No, wasn't there something after that? There was definitely something after that. Didn't Ant come after that, too?
That's not Savage Dragon.
I mean, technically not, but...
Yeah, I know. That's probably why, because maybe he was busy working on the Ant.
Besides, Kevin, Phil and I want Mom and Dad to stay together, okay? I know you want them to grow apart, but we like it. Well, we were talking about teams.
I don't want some devil to show up and say someone wasn't married or something.
Exactly. All right, what have you got for us, Kevin?
Are we doing Phil's news bit?
No.
Oh, we don't do that anymore because episodes don't come out on time.
I'm editing one with news from 3 months ago. So.
We're pretty far behind, so yeah, we may have to catch up first.
Did you know they stealth released a Transformers in G.I. Joe comic?
I didn't think it was that stealth. I saw a bunch of news articles. It seemed like I haven't picked it up yet, but I didn't think it was that stealth. Like, I thought there's like hundreds of thousands of copies in comic shops now.
No, I remember it was like 2 weeks ago, and there was like super secret, and I remember people saying, hey, did we ever find out what the secret, like, no one spoiled it yet? So apparently you're more plugged into the comic newsosphere or whatever it is nowadays than I am.
Well, I'm not.
All that Mastodon time is paying off.
Yeah, for me it's the G.I. Joe thing, like, big spoiler if you're concerned about movies and everything, skip ahead 30 seconds, but apparently there's some G.I. Joe in the end of the Transformer movie teaser.
Oh, cool.
Like at the end credits or in the end bit. I haven't watched a Transformers movie in a very long time, but I'm, as Phil says, into this G.I. Joe nonsense. In fact, I was at a G.I. Joe show and on Sunday, a little toy show. I mean, they had other stuff, but yeah, so I've heard all about that. Those movies, I wouldn't. I'm not running out to watch it, but when it comes to Amazon or whatever, I'll watch it to see.
Yeah, the problem with G.I. Joe on the big screen, too, though, when it's not a cartoon, when it's live action, is it just feels like army people then, you know?
Yeah, I also feel like it's a lot of different things. There were the toys, there were the cartoon, there was the comic, and they're all fairly different. So if you're into one, I don't know that it has a great through line. Like you say, Phil, it's army thing. Like, so it's hard.
Like, they don't have their gimmicks, really, like they do in the cartoon or something.
Yeah,
like
so
that,
if you do something line, like the cartoon, people that want it more serious, I think, are going to be like, it's kind of a dumb cartoon. But if you make it too serious and boring, then the people are like, oh, it's just a dumb action movie. You know, it's, I feel like it's a hard, everyone says, oh, just make a good one. But I think that
that's true.
Even though it has such a large appeal, all these different elements of the fandom, I think it also lacks, like, a unifying. Like, who's the most important guy? Do you do the ninja with the pet wolf? Like, they're pretty...
No, I thought it was the silent guy, whatever.
Yeah, that's the
guy.
He's a ninja, and he has, like, his own pet wolf. And, like, it seems somewhat outlandish from if you're then going to try and walk that back. Because the last few movies had big Hollywood names in it. Like, it's not like they're putting out it with a bunch of nobodies. I just don't know what the formula is, but you know, Paramount wants that money because they can get that Hasbroverse going. They can have G.I. Joe, Micronauts, Transformers, My Little Pony, ROM, all in one unit, you know, like Marvel and DC does.
Well, now that you have Kirkman involved,
and I
maybe you can get some traction.
I'm surprised, Kevin, you didn't mention the Valiant Cinematic Universe, which I know.
Oh, is that alive again all of a sudden, just to disappear again?
No.
No.
What do you mean? They got Bloodshot. That's
That was a cinematic universe?
That's the first... That's phase
that
one.
That was Bloodshot?
Allegedly.
Yeah, everyone wants these combined shared universes for the big money, but... It's hard to put it together. But anyways, Kevin, let's these people don't want to hear about that.
I had one other thought. I probably would have went to see a Beast Wars movie if it had no people, and that would have been my first Transformers movie. But I saw people in the trailer, so
yeah, it reminds me of to tie it back to Steve's book, and those Godzilla movies. I never cared about the people. I was always
This is the thing. Like in Transformers, legitimately, there's people. But Beasties, Beast Wars, there was no people. Like, I know for sure this time there's no people in that.
Oh, but they got to tie it into the existing franchise, and that brings the people in, I'm sure. Plus, for some reason, they don't want to make movies with just monsters or robots or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be like an animated feature then, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to track all that stuff. All right, Super Steve, what have you got for us?
Next up is a 48-page one-shot from earlier this year from Dark Horse. It is Nexus Nefarious, written by Nexus co-creator Mike Baron, with art by Richard Bonk, who has come a couple of times to our small little local Albany show.
Nice. I'm not, is he evoking the Rude Dudes, or does he do his own style thing?
Well, he's got his own style. It's clean like Rude, but it's his own thing. It has a little touch of that Burn influence as well, but he's his own guy, Bonk, the way he lays down blacks and has his own forms. I'm not really sure who to compare him to, but it's a nice clean book. Art is sharp, storytelling, sequentials all flows real nice. You know, my favorite deal, a few characters, one scenario, boom, you take the ride, you get the adventure, basically. Nexus, if you're not familiar with him, he is a cosmic judge, jury, and executioner. He kind of goes around and mites out his justice, but he is a assassin and takes out the bad guy usually fully. And in this one, he gets wind of a penal colony that isn't being managed right, and people are just being sent in exile to hard labor on this remote location. And Nexus goes and stirs things up by visiting and makes everybody all nervous, and eventually becomes a prisoner himself, and then has to escape and get off world. And it's a nice, straightforward here to there adventure.
Nexus, that's the blue guy with the lightning bolt?
Yes.
Yeah, I've never read any of that. Is that, what should I pick up if I'm going to read that for the first time?
If you can, something that is short like this and self-contained, so that you can wrap your head around the story.
That one's called Nefarious, you said?
Yes.
Okay, that's
I also really like price. the and it might be available digitally, the Nexus newspaper strips that Rude and Baron did a couple of years ago that I think they were like doing through Kickstarter and stuff. And
they have that for sale at Indiegogo.
They're nice and colorful. Yep, and good stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's he's just a badass. He's got the pretty girlfriend and the, you know, few alien like pals that he hangs around with. It's usually more a case of what the adventure is. Like, he and his supporting cast are all solid, and whether I like a story or not is usually based on what the story involves. If it overly involves, you know, political stuff, and I'm feeling like it's the, you know, Star Wars prequel movies, you know, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And other times you get more of a straightforward adventure. There's this whole thing with like a Galactus analogy that was really good. But it gives them an opportunity to do some parodies of other types of comic things and events and stories that we've appreciated, and kind of touch upon it in their own way, and do, sometimes there's characters and scenarios that are familiar to longtime comic book readers, but other times there's things where and I don't know whether it's, I don't know where the finger should be pointed, but there are times where the story just flows and it almost doesn't make sense how it gets from part B to part C. It's like all of a sudden this alien thing showed. There's a few Deus Ex Machinas that pop up along the way, but it's just part of the cosmic trippy ride. I take it in stride. Nexus is good stuff.
Yeah, I have a bunch of it. I remember it, the old days, the Steve Rude and Baron. It's been in a bunch of different collections too, Phil. Like a lot of different.
Yeah.
They've traded it all over, like hardcovers and little digests and There's,
well, I
they
found
keep, but they keep
the
making new stuff.
One,
and, yeah, sometimes
one,
the more modern stuff
for pretty cheap, like they're a pretty good price.
Yeah, well, I know Phil likes old '80s indie books too. Yeah.
I do, because I like That's I know true. Him very well. I just never read it.
I picked up the second issue or the first issue off of the racks just because it just looked weird and it was a really heavy cardstock cover, and so I kind of got, you know, was familiar with him sort of close to his beginning, but it's neat to see him still around after all these decades.
All like new and full color.
I like the cover for Nefarious One also.
Yeah, that's very evocative of what the art's like inside. Nice and clean and good colors.
It's only $20 on Amazon, so I'm going to order it.
That's how we move units here, folks. To each other.
There you go. One sale.
Well, I don't want to mess up our... I might have to put a little indie in the indie noise with all this Image and Malibu and Dark Horse talk. As
oh,
noted,
don't get crazy.
I went to Pasadena Robo Toy Fest and G.I. Joe show out here in Pasadena, obviously. And there was, you know, mostly it's voiceover people and Power Rangers and stuff for the guests. But they did have one comic book artist, and I was looking at his rack. And you know what I always go for? You know, they always have, like, a sketchbooks or this, that. I always look for their comics.
Is it Rob Liefeld?
So,
he did
no.
some G.I. Joe. No.
This was Eugene Randolph Young. So I was like, oh, you know, what's going on? And he had this comic, Guila the Dark Stranger, G-U-I-L-A, Guila the Dark Stranger. And it's part one. And I was like, oh, it looks good. I'll buy the comic. Oh, it's, you know, he's like, oh, I'm working on this with the other guy who came up with it. And I just have issue one here. And I'm like, oh, you know, are you going to kickstart? He's like, I don't know. We're just putting them out. Perry Clark is the guy. And so I buy it and I take it home. It's funny when I look it up after. This came out, issue one came out in 2009. Issue two still not out. So I don't think it's going to come out anytime soon. But that being said, I don't really, you know me, I don't give a hoot. I really enjoyed it. The protagonist is a lean, muscular woman. And in her avenging Dark Stranger outfit, she wears this white kind of, I guess it's an African mask. Maybe it gives more detail deep within here, but it's very cool because, you know, they're kind of oblong shape. So it has so much forehead, it distorts when you look at them. Like, it's a pretty creepy, by having it be white against her dark skin. And she's, like, lean and muscular and kind of basically, like, sort of a tight-fitting leather jumpsuit type of arrangement. Maybe something like you'd see Elektra wear or something like that. Not that design, but that kind of sensibility to it. And she carries like a short-handled double-headed axe that's pretty bad looking. But what I like about it is it's a very short handle, so it seems like it'd be super impractical in the real world, but I don't care. I like reading comic books, you know what I mean? Like, I don't mind. To Phil's comment about Rob Liefeld, like, I don't care about impractical design, but it's your basic revenge story. Her daughter was caught in the crossfire, and that drove her to get revenge on the people that were behind it. And then you find out it's some big when she gets to the Joe Chill character, finds out that, you know, the big crime boss, you know, I was just a bag man, you know, you need the big crime boss who was working behind the scenes, and we get the shot of the woman, but you only see like the chair and the big boss is in shadow when they intro, you know, that, like, you never, the first thing is never the face. It's always like the character in a chair, face and silhouette, and then eventually it goes to like the close-up and you see the face, and you're always like, yeah, this just feels like, I would say, an 80s or 90s kind of action thriller revenge story. Well told. Very, you know, I like, as I've discussed ad nauseum, sort of the rough indie, you know, this is one printed by Kablam, so you know the type of paper and all that stuff. If you've bought a lot of self-published books, Kablam and Ninja Print and those companies, there's that kind of gloss to the paper and how the ink lays on it feels very familiar. But, I mean, you know, there's some parts where the backgrounds are a little bit sparse at times. But I thought the action flowed well. I was able to follow a character. Character designs are great. In fact, there's a couple of pinups of her in the back in her outfit, and I just think it's a great design. It's creepy looking. It's a cool revenge. Why not, you know? I just, at the time, I mean, what was he going to say? Like, we're never going to, of course you're like, oh yeah, we'll come out with the other issues soon. Like, wow, I'm happy with the comic. I bought issue one, though. If I ever see issue two or three or whatever, I'll pick it up. But I thought it was weird, because normally those guys are always like, oh yeah, check my website. You know, they have whatever their promotional outlet. And if you're not Kickstarter or selling it through something, that it should be a big clue. But I still enjoyed the heck out of it. And you got to go to a show and buy a comic, right, guys?
So they must have been selling other things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sketchbook.
Other appearances then? Cause, or they have, like, all this stock still? So they're like, I might as well bring it with me.
He actually said that what was interesting, I guess this was print on demand. So you can print very small, like, it. He doesn't have, because he was saying that's how he preferred it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that way you don't have a garage full of, like,
yeah,
you know, 3,000 copies of your book that you got to flog everywhere you go. Not that that was smart, but yeah, I mean, mostly it looked like he had other stuff. I like to grab someone's comic, but if I see them and they have all this different stuff, I'm going to usually grab the comic book on their table and not a print. Or sometimes I get the sketchbook, but usually I really want to see, like, what I'm way more interested in the kind of worlds they create than seeing pinups of this, that, or the other thing.
Fair enough.
All right, Kevin?
I'm still enjoying some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Usagi Yojimbo.
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them?
There's a video game coming out, a new one with Usagi in it, of Ninja Turtles. Yeah.
Huh.
What, like, for all the platforms, Phil, or you don't
know? Yeah, I think it's made by the same people that did that remaster recently or whatever. But all I've seen was, like, the cover or whatever, and it's the Ninja Turtles, and then Usagi's in the middle all big.
I was wondering if the Usagi would then be based on, like, the Netflix stuff.
No, this is the normal one I recognize.
I mean, that the Netflix is, like, crazy. Like, when we first heard about that, I think we were all like, oh boy, he's going to be in outer space and all. Like imagination went there, because it was, like, oh, it's not him, but it's him, but it's the future. And then, like, the show is pretty not out there. It's pretty regular.
IDW had one of the recent flash sales, but it was only 30%. And it was only maybe 15 items, but it was mostly a lot of the turtle stuff. Because their portfolio, without the Transformers and G.I. Joe, I mean, I think they sell My Little Pony, but their kind of big sellers are really leaning on the Turtles, I would think, and My Little Pony. I mean, they have those indie books, like we talked about Dead Seas, but
yeah,
I don't know what their big lineup is other than Turtles.
Who's that?
IDW.
They've got the Rocketeer now. They just did a one-shot, and they're starting
didn't
a new
they
ongoing.
Always have the...
I feel like they've been...
Well, I mean, they're using the Rocketeer, then, oh, okay. I should say.
Like, they had that other mini from maybe last year.
And they did the reprints, I think. And
they just had a one-shot that came out, and I saw a new series solicited.
Nice. Yeah. I just feel... I mean,
the one-shot had Adam Hughes and Jay Lee.
Wow.
Stories, yeah, I know some people were talking up that Adam Hughes cover.
And the,
like,
third,
to see Jay
and the
Lee's
third,
version,
the
yeah.
Third story in it that had the artist that I didn't recognize, not that he was a fine artist. That was the longer story, and that had a unnamed crossover with Indiana Jones.
Oh, cool. That's
where he's awesome. Where he's Dr. Jones, and then you see him in, like, silhouette.
That's a good crossover.
Cracking the whip. Yeah, yeah. It was done very clever.
Yeah.
And it was more like Betty dealt with both of the guys, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was cool.
Yeah, I'm part of the problem, because I stopped reading it pretty quickly, but they, like, the ROM and Micronauts stuff didn't go, I guess, didn't set
them. Well, it wasn't the right ROM and Micronauts, was it?
Well, I stopped reading it, but
they learned it wasn't just the characters, it was the other things that was added to it, the worlds that were built.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any indication that Marvel will pick that up, or if that's just like a reprint job, like that Godzilla essential thing.
We'll see.
I mean, it's hard to tell. But I do enjoy some Stan Sakai. I think I'm becoming especially these types of things, like all through the ages, you got to imagine there's some paperwork, like he keeps on showing up with the Turtles. It's like, oh, we're doing another cartoon, or we're doing some more action figures or whatever, and it's like, Usagi's always there. So I gather from this, like, there's some events that were going on in his own book. Because they seem like there's some big march to war here. And then, of course, there's, like the people that are like, oh, well, there's some guy causing trouble, and then, you know, can you help out type of thing? And it's like a evil turtle, like, when they go by the riverside, down by the riverside. And like some evil turtle, not Slash, jumps out, but it's either like those dudes jumping out of the water in like Castlevania, or if you will, like in a Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild type of thing, where you go by the, you know, there's always, you have the reptile dudes jumping out of the water, right? And they just totally like massacre the guy. It's sort of like a half and half. I know it's like one of those things where like modern comics where the characters don't meet until like the end of the issue. And then people are like, oh man, I can't believe you did that. Like, how come you didn't do that on your first page or something? But I like how the Turtles one starts out where they have like you setting the scene, and then you just see like the manhole cover pop up with the Turtles' eyes there. And then they come out and I'm like, that is such a Turtles thing. Then they go after like this weird like robotic guy. Well, the story is like Elsewhen, so or where when. And then this guy is like some like maybe like a little bit like Terminator-ish. Maybe a little Fugitoid-ish. And he has this weird thing about going back in time to like help himself out in the future. Like, if I become a warlord now, I'll be one in the future. And I'm like, dude, you're starting to sound a lot like Kang. Like, I'm trying to figure this out. So it seems like reality is like resetting itself or something. And so then the Turtles will like just get into, like, he has a device where he can get to the past, but the Turtles can also use his other device. So, like, before, like, reality resets itself, they, like, hop into his canister, and then they end up in Usagi's time. And I assume this character in orange is, like, that new character, because wasn't there, like, a new, oh, what do you call it? Not a, like a new rabbit, like a new, I don't know. I never read the book. I mean, I read the first issue, but, I mean, that was it. Because it seemed like the regular book is more like the modern times. What was it, like some kind of like fable or those kind of like legends they were telling? And this seems nothing like that. So it's cool.
Correction on the video game. It's DLC for the last one, and it makes him a playable character.
Oh. Yeah. The last one.
Yeah, I guess that remastered they did. Remember, you got it? You were all hyped about it?
Yeah, with all the...
So I'm guessing that one.
Because there was the collection, and then there was, like, the... Yeah, the new version of, like, the old game.
So it must be that.
Yeah, I guess so. Because weren't they also making some, like some Ronin stuff, maybe? The last Ronin?
I don't know. The Frank Miller book. That's what I think of.
Yeah, I don't keep... the Turtles are a whole mystery unto themselves. I mean, I'm glad they're still around, but I read a little bit, but it quickly spirals into... I don't know. I mean, with all the different cartoons and movies and everything, it's hard to know what the status quo is, I guess. I mean, if you like the story, you like the story.
I mean, if you're used to DC Comics...
All right, Super Steve, what do you got for us?
All right, should I fire off my quick hits here?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Give us a quick hit.
All right, one is appropriately named Quick Stops. And they are anecdotes from the annals of the Askewniverse, written by Kevin Smith.
Oh, okay.
It's from Dark Horse, and the artist is Jeremy Simser. And these are black and white, four black and white issues, kind of touching upon all of the different characters that you've seen in Kevin Smith movies, and some showing like where they are now, like the Chasing Amy crew, and you get plenty of Jay and Silent Bob, and there's cool weed and sex and typical some Clerks ass stuff. Some it goes all around the Askewniverse. So
are these collecting like the old? I really like the old. No, it's new Jim Mahfood worked on some.
Yeah. No. This is new stuff.
Oh, I might have to check it out, because I thought those old ones were really good. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Mahfood was a beast. Another is the first of a four-issue limited series from AWA, and it's Mike Diodato, his latest book, and this time with Cullen Bunn, called Red Zone. And the book starts off very boring to me. Even though it's lushly illustrated, but it is talking heads and scenario setting of a professor getting an overture from like the CIA or Secret Service or whatever about extracting someone that he knows from Russia who wants to come to America, basically, and defect. And so then it moves into the operation of setting up the thing and going and setting up the dinner where they go to meet, and she's going to leave with him. And I'm like, okay, are we getting somewhere here? And she turns things a little bit on their head by saying, you're bringing my daughter with adult grown mini dress, high heels wearing daughter. My daughter's coming with us. Oh, that's changing the plan. I hope there's no more surprises. Well, there is a surprise. There's people after them, and it's like this commando squad that just goes nuts and just takes everybody out, and it all goes to hell, and they are running for their lives. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. He gets her back to one of his safe houses, and the issue ends with the setup of he's got like a cache of weapons. He's like, I'm going to get you out of Russia to his mark. So once the action started, it really picked up and intrigued me.
Cullen Bunn is probably my favorite horror comic writer out there these days.
I know there's probably going to be a twist to this somewhere in the second issue, but we'll see. Horror-wise, I have read the first two issues of a new Dark Horse series, miniseries called All Eight Eyes, written by Steve Fox with art by Peter Kowalski. And this one is, it's very Men in Black, you know, that comic that became a movie there. It's where there's, you know, a hidden world that you didn't even know existed around you, and we are the agents that deal with that world, except instead of it being aliens or anything, the premise is that there are giant spiders that like live amongst us and just hunt humans, and they slip undercover and have been for, you know, centuries, and they, you know, if once you know, you can't unknow it. And it's about a guy who, instead of it being guys in, you know, who are like G-men who have equipment and resources, no, it's just like some dude who is like just a regular rough and tumble type guy who knows about the fact that these spiders exist, and he hunts them. And in the first issue, he ropes in somebody new to join him in his quest to, you know, defend people against these giant spiders and take out nests and stuff in the park and hunt them down. And so we get to see the world through this new recruit's eyes, basically, just like in Men in Black, you saw it through the new recruit's eyes there.
I love the covers for that series. That's what really always caught my eye from it.
Really good so far. Yeah. And then last and not least, did you guys already talk about the Conan Free Comic Book Day?
Yes, but I wanted to know what you thought.
Yeah, so the Free Comic Book Day from Titan Comics, who now have the Conan license, they had a Jim Zub written, Roberto De La Torre drawn, and here's a blast from the past, Jose Villabura, or Villarubia, I should say. My mistake for reading his name so fast so many times, doing the colors. Totally old school, you know, De La Torre has this big John Buscema thing going, so it's just awesome to look at. You know, my fear is the Jim Zub angle and what he's done with the character so far. But this, what do you, you know, you it's it, there was no story here to go wrong. which, you know, maybe masking a problem or, you know, maybe not. We'll see. But it's a another show of the siege at Venerium, which is Conan's first battle.
Yeah, I was going to say it's nothing we haven't seen before. So
no.
I mean, there's nothing that can really go off the rails of as of yet.
But because there's no story, it doesn't matter that it's nothing we've seen before. It just is introducing Conan. Nothing really happens except he's there at the Battle of Venerium, and you know that it's a historical event. And then there's a bunch of like montage pinup pages that show other or suggest other great adventures that Conan has had, including you know, the thing in the crypt, the tower and the elephant, the elite. And other things. So that's fun.
You think they're going to do some of those stories, or is that just there as a weird flashback thing?
I don't know. Why do those stories over again?
Right?
Again? And this didn't really give away their modus operandi is going to be, because even though we've seen Venerium six ways from Sunday, this really wasn't even trying to add anything. Oh, there was no narrative, you know, no thing happening that they were trying to tell us different or anything, nor were they trying to replace any other story. They were just like, hey, Conan fought at Venerium. Look at De La Torre's awesome artwork.
Well, that's basically what it is, because I'm like, as a teaser, I'm like, it doesn't really go, oh, I better check that out now. Like it didn't excite me.
Oh, it excited me, but it didn't excite me to say there's something else here that I need to see more of. It was like, oh, yeah, Conan, he's awesome. This artwork is great. Yeah, I remember that one and that one and that one. All his greatest hits. There we go. But so we'll see. But I'm optimistic because De La Torre's artwork is so awesome. I'm going to enjoy it anyway, just flipping through the pages. And if I he just better not have a freaking lightsaber. That was too much, man. Too much. I thought they started going off the rails even in the Marvel stuff and in the Savage Sword of Conan magazines when they had that Devourer of Souls dude, because it was just a little bit too much of having them be a superhero-y type villain. And of course, those weren't the Roy Thomas stories, of course. But we'll see what they do.
I mean, that Dark Horse run is pretty impressive.
It had great things, and it had some cruddy things.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. I'm not going to belabor the point too much, but I did want to. I promised, and as threatened, I am going to open one other item I picked all right up at the show.
My pants. No.
We're all familiar with, I think we are, the brilliant and clever marketing of packaging toys and comics. So, G.I. Joe, fully owned by Hasbro, got into this in the mid-aughts. They had a bunch of... They started getting into higher articulation figures. I think G.I. Joe's always had good articulation, but as action figure technology moved on... So I think they just had a bunch of them sitting around. Why not pair them up with comic books? A couple figures, a comic book, slap them on the shelves, well done. Well, at the show, they had a bunch. I got one for $10. And I'm like, well, two figures and a comic book? Now, this is from the 2008 line. This is near the end. And believe it or not, I believe the comic book in here is original to this packaging, which is nice. Because normally they just, you know, you just knock out a reprint, you put on a new cover. But here I am. An exclusive Larry Hama comic inside. Here I am destroying yet another. Priceless. This thing cost me $10, gentlemen. Here I am, totally ruining its value. Some of these are actually, I believe, expensive. The earlier ones, are, I don't really know, or maybe whatever, but, I mean, $10 I'm willing to bet that, yeah, if I hold on to it for another 50 years or something, it'll be worth. But yeah, I was like, oh, I got, it's fun. I have a bunch of these from Marvel and from G.I. Joe. DC recently had the Page Punchers. I don't know if you've got, those are little like 2-inch figures. I almost picked up some of them, but the Walmart by me is totally savaged. Figures get stolen out of the packaging. I always feel bad because, you know, someone's going to buy that for their kid or whatever, get home because they don't know that it's supposed to come with a little action figure guy. Or they take the, ooh, it comes with file cards? Yeah. So I get a comic book, 2 file cards, 2 characters, and 2 character stands, and all their little toys and everything. $10? Come on. I mean, I'm sure in 2008 it was only, actually, it might have been $10 in 2008. I don't know, but the other thing I like, I'm in the soft goods camp. For the those of you that like toys, I know that's Kevin and Steve. I know Phil keeps them in the box. What are your thoughts on soft good versus plastic? Kevin?
Soft goods. You mean like a cape?
Yeah, like capes. Not made of plastic, but made of soft goods.
Thumbs up or thumbs down? Probably plastic most of the time.
Whoa. You're off the show. Phil, Steve.
Well, I think I prefer soft, but I find plastic do end up looking better, though, when it's on display. Because the fabric just doesn't match the rest of the figure a lot of the time, I find. But I do prefer soft if it's done nice.
I mean, I like that the Beast, they did with the Marvel Legends, they have him with a cloth, like, lab coat. I find that worked out really well. All right, you're can't always pull that off.
You're back on the show, Kevin.
There we go. Yes.
Super Steve, any thoughts on the plastic versus cloth?
Yeah, I'm in the middle on that, where I've seen so many of the Marvel Legends have really nice sculpted plastic capes where they just look really sharp. And it's like, wow, that Doctor Strange cape looks really good. That comes off well to me. But when they do have cloth accoutrements, And it's done well. Usually when it's pulled really tight and battened down somehow, so you're getting a cloth surface. Like, I got a statue of Black Canary, and she's got like the fishnets, and the fishnets are cloth, even though the statue isn't. And it's pretty cool to have the texture there. And actually, there's a figure too that's like a Marvel Legends, but it's a DC figure, and it, whatever they are, DC Select or whatever, of the Canary, and it, she's got the fishnets, so works like when Wonder Woman has the rope and it's actually like a cloth rope. That's pretty cool, rather than it being like a hard thing clipped to her side or something.
All right, you get a stay of execution. The other thing I love about, because they've been in the plastic forever, so Cobra Commander comes with a pistol and a sword in his hand. He has the sheath. The sheath is bent like a 15-degree angle, because it's been stuffed in that, you know, shell forever. So, yeah, if there is funny bits about that. But, yeah, I freed it from its plastic jail, ruined its value, and now I have all these cool toys that I will be playing with for the rest of the evening. But, yeah, that's anything. Anybody got anything else to add, or should we end it here?
I got one more thing.
Give it to us, Kevin.
Apparently, I teased, according to your show notes, Exo Manowar number 1, The Unconquered.
Yeah. I mean, you talked a little bit about it, but you didn't really go into heavy detail.
So, yeah, issues 2 and 3 have since come out. And if you're curious, I have the like the pre-order edition, like the classic covers where they bring back like old Image creators and Image Valiant creators and have them do some covers. So like the third issue has like a Van Hook Exo Manowar where he's like smoking it. The smoke actually kind of reminds me of like Attack on Titan when the Titans like overexert themselves and it's smoking. I mean, kind of appropriate thinking about the armor as more like a living organism that has overexerted itself, because that's kind of where this story like picks up.
Kevin, there's a story. I'm buying this book, you know, because of the Liam Sharp art.
What? Steve?
It's Liam Sharp art.
And, I mean, it's the, crazy. The art is pretty wild and pretty, like, I call this like the ultimate heavy metal Exo Manowar comic.
Totally, totally. Very heavy metal-esque. But I find, as much as I like Sharp's art, I also find it's sequentially usually very difficult to read storytelling-wise. So I've just been looking at the pictures. Comic book confession.
Well, there are certain sequences where I'm like, oh, he's broken it down into like geometric shapes instead of like that murky, unreal, like outer spaceness type of thing. It's almost like that Ashley Wood thing going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think he has it, like, as far as I know, and I think I picked one up, but I wasn't, like, I just saw his name on it. Like, he did an Image comic, and I think it's more of the same. So when I read that, I'm going to see how that compares to this. Because I'm pretty impressed with this. Because you have the moments where his like body is like reconstructing itself, or there's something wrong with his armor, and he's dreaming. It's just some crazy, unreal stuff. But he's in outer space all by himself type of thing, and then wouldn't you know it, he runs across some Romans.
They're everywhere.
March, I know, right? You just can't get rid of those guys, and he's a Visigoth.
They love to march.
And then they have that seer woman who's, I'm always looking at her costume, and you're like, oh, of course you are. Where it looks like either there's something there, or the costume is like perfectly proportioned to just cover herself up.
Yeah. Maybe I should be reading more Exo Manowar.
But it seems like their deal is that they've tried to, like, since it's sort of like, I don't know what you'd describe, like, the armor, the Shanhara, is sort of like more like a fruit or something that's grown. So it seems like these Romans are, like, up to some of their, even though it's been, like, thousands of years, like, it seems like they're along the lines of, like, ancient Rome, and they've been trying to make, like, their own, like, Exo Manowar armors. So everyone's always like, how come you can control it? How come you have it? Like, we want what you have. So I think that was suitably creepy, and, I mean, it doesn't have a supporting cast or something. Like, this is just, like, him out and about doing his business in outer space.
Thank God. You know how confusing it would be if there was a supporting cast?
I was thinking of you, though, because you're like, oh, I don't need anyone. I just want some easy characters. I don't want this whole world. And I'm like, here, it's just him.
Yeah, well, I'm buying the book, aren't I?
You are.
Man, there's no... They talk about Larry Hama. No other credits on this comic book.
Like, he drew it?
I don't. It says legendary writer, and it's about a quarter of an inch shorter than a regular, I guess, to fit in the packaging. So I wonder if on the reprints, how they, I guess it just cropped it.
He's the Stan Lee of G.I. Joe. He did everything.
It looks fine. I don't know if the guy's like, I don't want my name Alan Smithy, but I'm like, that seems weird that he didn't. Well, anyways, I'm sure I will enjoy this for all of time. But thanks to all our listeners. Thanks to the hosts. Hope everyone had a great time. Hopefully this episode gets posted.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
And have a great time, everybody. Kevin? You want to do your catchphrase?
Free the rabbit.
I thought we were doing the noise thing and all. Keep
making
stop,
noise.
Stop making noise. I can't remember. It's been too long. But thanks again, everybody. Talk to you later.
Later.
See the curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. The paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Summer, the jasmine's in bloom. July is dressed up and playing her tune. And I come home from a hard day's work, and you're waiting there, our care in the world. See the smile waiting in the kitchen, food cooking on the plates for two. Feel the arms that reach out to hold me in the evening when the day is through.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine.